Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
My mom was fond of an expression, the dog who caught the car. Now that I've finally latched onto one, I have no idea what to do with it.
On Vulcan, we have a similar expression. The Salat who ate its tail. Though I would point out you have a significant leg up over a quadrupedal beast. Your human intuition. It has guided us this far. We are all still here. I recommend you keep following it.
Okay. If you insist.
Oh, let's do this.
Okay.
Let's get started. Okay. Let's get started with this podcast.
Dan has given the order.
Is it time to start yet?
Seven seconds.
Is the order given, sir?
Oh, my goodness.
Remember that? Star Trek 2? Scotty's nephew? Is the order given? You know, he's dying. Guy's dying.
I.
The order's given. Anyway, don't worry about it. Okay, sorry. Hello.
Okay.
We got to get started right into this.
We got to get started.
There's all sorts of stuff going on this week.
All sorts of stuff going on.
Welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Let there be light.
Hello?
It is now. We have arrived at episode 303.
Get out.
Of the It's Got Star
Get
Trek.
Get the fuck out of here right
Nobody
now.
Nobody would have ever podcast. Thought Get that the, was going to happen.
Get the fuck out of here, Patrick.
Yeah. How many more do you think we'll do?
Five.
Yeah, it could be five.
It could be 500.
It could be 5 million. I knew that would piss off Dan. Dan doesn't like it when people do that.
It could be five or five dozen. It could be five or five times 25.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Dan.
Hey, what? Patrick, what? What are you going to say? What are you going to say next, Patrick? I can't wait to figure out what you're... I'm not going to be able to figure it out. I can't wait to find out what you're going to say next. I
mean, they ripped through flesh and bone.
I don't think you're going to figure this out. I was just going to ask...
What are you going to ask?
If you could do the... This guy makes me giggle. This is why I like hanging out with Dan.
The sauce lick.
This podcast is a great excuse to hang out with Dan and have him make me giggle.
Gooby gooby.
I hope he's making y'all giggle a little bit, too.
Make y'all giggle a little bit, too.
I was just going to say...
Mm-hmm. What are you going to say?
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, let's do it!
Oh, there we go. I was wondering if you had that handy. Thank you, Jesse. Yes, this is a podcast. And we're off to an illustrious start.
Here we go.
We're dangerous.
On episode 303 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast. So, what are we doing this week?
I don't give a... Flying hoot. I came in hot this episode. I was like dropping F-bombs right from the start. I better chill with that shit.
Yeah.
Chill the fuck out.
Yeah.
No. Keep up the high energy. It's great. Keep it up for the full 90 minutes. So we did the okay, let's do it. We did the...
Okay, let's do it!
Podcast number. The title of the episode we are discussing this week is...
The dog who caught the car.
That one?
Yeah. Okay. First of all, I mean, I know that's a saying, mm-hmm. but is it the saying?
I don't think I've ever heard those words in that specific order.
I've seen the comic that shows a dog catching the car.
I'm more familiar with the idea than there actually being a phrase that is said with those words in that order.
Yeah, the dog.
I'm more familiar
with
the more like the tail
imagery of catching the tail.
Yeah,
that makes.
Well, I mean, I've heard the story of like where people say like, oh, my dog would know what to do if he caught the car. You know, yeah. I don't think I've ever
heard anyone
say like in that specific order. Have you ever heard the story of the dog who caught the car? Right. Like, I've never heard those words.
Maybe
in the
22nd century.
Yeah, what maybe it's it? A 22nd century. Maybe it's a
23rd.
Maybe it happened on the latter half of the 21st century.
Yeah. Should he have updated it? And we'll get to the title soon, folks. Mm-hmm. Should he have updated it to the dog that caught the shuttlecraft?
Shuttlecraft.
Dogs can't fly.
Is that too nerdy?
Dogs can't fly. Unless they're in space and have space helmets on.
The shuttlecrafts like hover around a little bit, and it's a metaphor.
But metaphors have to make sense.
No, not always. Sometimes it's fun when they evolve into ridiculousness.
Okay, if you can teach a dog how to use a jetpack and put on a space helmet and make that he can fly through space, maybe.
Sure. I think in this world of flexible metaphors, I think you can.
Mm-hmm. What kind of dog? Like one of them little yippy dogs? Or like a golden retriever?
I hadn't really examined maybe it's an aphorism that deeply.
Maybe it's a golden doodle.
One of them noofies?
A golden doodle.
The floofy noofies?
A corgi noodle. Maybe it's a corgi noodle.
Dogs will be interesting in the future because...
This is irrelevant.
That's a fair point. But when you think about it...
I don't want to.
Depending on how things proceed, because a lot of people, of course, advocate for adopting and not going to dog breeders. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, right. We can probably expect dog breeding to continue for some amount of time in the future. But who knows by the 22nd, 23rd centuries what the case may be.
And you might have to be eating dogs.
What will dogs look like? Or will they all just be genetic monstrosities that we custom design? Yeah. I don't know.
Well, they won't
could
look
be all gross little squirts.
So, I mean, some people have posited that humans will all sort of look more homogenous as time goes on, but dogs are the opposite because they like went from wolves to being all these crazy things.
Well, that's
things.
Because dogs were bred on
right.
purpose.
Well, right. And so, exactly. And by that rationale, I would think that it would lean more towards monstrosity in the future. Yeah. Dogs would be more monstrous.
Yeah. You mean monstrous?
Because dogs usually have like certain functions. Like,
they were considered monsters.
Like hunting particular types of creatures you could have.
They weren't monsters.
They were considered monsters.
Okay. They weren't monsters.
You still don't have. You still never pulled the tape monsters. Of her saying, "I'm not a monster."
Well, if you give me a sec, wait before
do you have
you,
that quote.
I don't know because, like, I might have like, because when I make these name these files, I name them in such a way that I can read them on my thing because this just displays the file name. So sometimes I abbreviate things, and I might have abbreviated monsters to something that I have since forgotten.
Would it be helpful if you learned Chinese?
What kind of monsters are the Zeon sending against us?
If you're not a monster, Joseph.
If you learned
just a man.
Chinese kanji.
And so my friend.
That way you could have a different kanji for each sound file, kanji. And it would be easier for you to scan.
Isn't kanji like a rice dish?
But then I'd have to have like a big keyboard.
No, well, kanji is also, well, that's kanji. Kanji.
Oh, shit.
It's like a
here.
Rice dish.
You're
kanji.
Right. Okay. My mistake.
Does this human speak the truth?
This is indeed irrelevant. The title of the episode.
Wait a second. Wait. Okay. It might be somewhere. I'm just letting you. Okay.
No
whatever.
Okay. It's good.
Whatever, dude. So I don't even fucking care.
The title.
Nobody said you did.
The title of this week's episode is. Now, I'm not drawing this out for dramatic or comedic effect. I just want to preface this by saying this is another. No. It's not tedious.
It's the effect of being tedious.
No.
Sorry.
It's
entertaining.
I'm sorry.
And it's infotaining because we arrive now, as I'm attempting to get to the title.
Where would I stay?
We arrive at the first controversy, which is a pronunciation controversy.
Ah, yes.
And I know we can't start the episode till we say the title of the episode, but before we say the title of the episode, I just wanted to specify that my pronunciation...
I think I agree with you, Patrick.
...of Spock's pet is different than Ethan Peck's rendition of Spock's pet.
I thought Spock's that was pet. Odd. I noticed, okay. I noticed sorry. That.
Spock's pet, not his pet. I've got Ethan Peck on the
mind. You were watching Willow recently.
I was not.
Don't accuse out of the me way, of Peck.
Don't accuse me of watching that weird pig movie.
Yeah, he doesn't like that.
I'm not a big fan of Willow.
I remember trying to rewatch Willow like 15 years later. I was like, I'm going to rewatch Willow. I remember seeing that movie. God. I think I got halfway through it. I got kind of tired.
Yeah. I've seen a whole bunch of Willow because I live with a Willow fan.
Yeah.
Like, it was one of those movies that I remembered liking a lot more in the past that when I rewatched it later, I liked it less. Wait, yeah. I don't think I worded that correctly.
I think everyone
I'm
listening
cool with Willow.
Totally understands yeah. and identifies.
I thought
with
I was
going to
like it
about.
A lot more than I did. I think I got bored actually yeah. at one point, and I don't think I quite made it to the horrible scene near the end.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but like okay. that doesn't that part knowing that was coming up was not encouragement for me to watch it more. I was like, I got to sit through this boring part, and then I have to like, sit through that part, which like is exciting, I guess, but it's also kind of fucked up. So I don't know.
Are you talking about the beginning of this week's podcast?
What? No. Oh yeah, this is a fucked up. It's we're 8 minutes in, and yeah. we still haven't said the yeah. title of the episode.
Yeah. But okay, so the title of the episode, I would say that the title of the episode is The Salot Who Ate Its Tail.
Yeah.
The Salot Who Ate Its Tail.
Salot.
But this version of Spock would disagree. But
the Salot has eaten its tail.
The TAS version of Spock, I think, would be the Salot.
To rush a Salot is to risk a goring.
I identify with the well Saru said. Well pronunciation.
Said. Wait, I want to. Now I got to play it.
I think we're all on the same page here.
Yeah, wait, so it's.
To rush a Salot is to risk a goring.
The Salot has eaten its tail.
To rush a Salot is to risk a goring.
The Salot who ate its tail.
Well, you know, this Spock has an attitude.
But I mean, different rhythm.
I mean, Star Trek is, and it's not the only series that does this. I mean, there's the whole, like, Star Wars where it's Han Solo, but then,
Han,
you old dog, or whatever.
The Oriens.
Colt 45.
The Oriens and the Orions.
Yes, the Oriens and the Orions.
What do you say? Han, you old pirate. That's what he says.
Han.
But Star Trek does a, but I mean, but Star Trek does have a history of, like, different characters pronouncing like
Shatner in particular.
Yeah.
Pronouncing words or names differently within the same episode.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mungato.
Even the same actor pronouncing
Dr. Roboto.
Dr. Roboto. Dr. Robotnik. Okay.
It's just a crazy idea.
Indeed. So now we've got a few voicemails, three voicemails as it happens. And
look, I know we got off to a rough start here, and there's nothing I could say that can make up for that.
That's going to be a useful one,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
But then we'll get into our discussion of, I think, an episode that was very well received broadly.
I was thinking, sorry, real quick. I was thinking about how Open Pike Jesse was talking about how it's funny because like I'll be like, that one's going in the best of, yeah. and then I never play it again. He's right. He's absolutely right. And I think the reason for that is because of the way the sound software works. Mm-hmm. It's not. Like, I do have a folder called Best Of, where yeah. I put them in.
Yeah.
But it's not easy to change, like, folders or soundboards mm-hmm. or whatever you want to call them. I'll just call them folders. But so, like, right now I'm in this episode's folder, and each mm-hmm. episode has their own folder. Now there's a separate folder for Best Of, right?
You were born in 1980. Because you call them folders, and I'm like, that's right, of course, they're folders. And I was like, you know what? A lot of young people, they know what we're talking about.
Well, what would you call it?
I have no idea.
They probably call them glee blobs or something.
Glee blobs.
What's up, my glee blobs?
Okay, anyway.
I don't know, kids organize information these days. It's all relational. Relational. It could be anywhere and anything.
Yeah, fuck a logical tree structure. It's too straightforward and easy.
Yeah.
No,
take
anyways,
a look at my Plex directory. It's nicely organized.
Anyways, kids. The way this particular software works, it's not easy to change between different soundboards. And so in order to play my best of sounds, I would have to, suppose I put them in the best of just so I have a place that I can find them in general. But if I want to quickly play them on the fly in an episode, it's hard to switch boards in time. So what I have to do is I have to manually add each one to each episode. Yeah. So every time, all these extra sounds that I play, like,
oh, this human is full of worms.
You add sabotage.
We're
week,
dangerous.
Every week, I manually add each one of those sounds.
I did
sounds
not know
so,
that.
So every single episode has soundboard has a set of these in there. So it gets, so I'm really.
It sounds tedious.
It's, I don't
yeah,
get
it's,
it.
It's tedious. And the more I add, the more work it is from then until the rest of time. So,
I don't get it.
So yeah, so that's why I don't do it, and it's and I wish I had a some software that worked better for that.
All right,
but
well, write
know.
It.
Well,
at,
I
feedback
bet you could make
Star Trek.com. Yeah,
I could
or a script.
I think
you
I could.
Could.
I could,
you
but
could.
Like, but like it, that shit is fucking time consuming.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I don't know if I. And plus, I do this for my job. I'm not exactly inspired to
right,
do an app.
Yeah,
although that
yeah.
there are some people who like. Who like for their job they're programmers and they go home and they program like entire like graphics
that's
engines.
That's a special breed.
3D yes. graphics engines where they invent their world and sell it for $1 million. And I'm
specific
I'm very,
example.
I'm very like I have a lot of respect for those people that they can do that shit all day for work and ends their free time. All right. Anyway, cool. So that's all I have to say about that.
Excellent. So,
thank you, sir.
To new audience members, this is a Star Trek podcast.
Yes.
Star Trek.
Our first voicemail is from our old friend Isaac.
Hey, yeah. Isaac.
From Trek 365.
No.
Or Trek 365.
Buzza, buzza, buzza. Hello, dinguses, wieners, and jam eaters. It is Isaac from the neighbouring Trek 365 podcast calling in to say g'day. In your most recent podcast, Dan started a sentence with anyone from Australia, dot, dot, dot. And he might as well have just said, hey, Isaac, because he knew that I was going to chime in with a voicemail.
It's true.
Look, Dan asked, do Australians like miling in Western Australia? And look, there's three things in this world that I hate. People that can count and people from miling Western Australia. Fraser sent a voicemail in and he said he would still listen to you guys even if you called him a piece of shit. And I would too. And I wondered, I know you've got this thing where you get a free haiku if you send in a review. I was wondering if you'd get a free insult if you send in a voicemail. Jesse, looking at you. Wouldn't mind having an insult come my way.
Oh, no.
All right, guys, keep up the good work. See you next time. This is Isaac checking out.
Thanks, Agamus.
Yeah, Jesse, that's because every time we mention the haiku, you're always like,
oh, fuck you.
I'm going to give you a fuck you.
Yeah, he wants a roast. He wants a Jesse roast.
Can you come up with a good insult? Do you have any anti-Australian or indeed anti-Tasmanian insults? Probably not. I don't know.
I think so.
Were there any...
Timey kangaroo down,
foolish.
Sport. Okay. Timey kangaroo down.
Did they have kangaroos
down
in Tasmania?
Timey kangaroo down, sport. Timey kangaroo down.
Are there any...
they might not have any snakes.
Comical military or political failures in history related to Australia or
not that I
Tasmania?
No.
Timey kangaroo down, sport. Timey kangaroo down.
The only insult I can think of, Isaac, is that those cute little Tasmanian devils you got, they keep biting each other on the face and giving each other weird face cancer.
Timey kangaroo down, sport. Timey kangaroo down.
And I'll admit that's more sad than an insult.
It's a bizarre pastiche.
I don't know.
I'm just singing the Australian national anthem.
That's not what that is.
YouTube suggested a video to me the other day titled Australia's, in parentheses, mostly uninhabited island, and it was about Tasmania.
Oh, no.
I didn't watch the video.
Don't they have like Norfolk Island or something?
Well, I don't know about that, but Hobart is a big...
Hobart!
Hobart's a city.
Hobart!
Anyway, thank you very much, Isaac, as always. And as folks, always. Go check out Trek 365. That's a podcast that comes out every day, and it's 365 seconds long. So it's a manageable length that comes out every single day, and it's covering the most memorable Star Trek episodes by some metric or rubric. I forget exactly what that was, but we've participated many times.
You guys have never heard that song, Timey Kangaroo Down?
I've heard it.
By Rolf Harris.
Rolf Harris?
Yeah.
All right.
Who is that?
Have you heard that
song?
Who is
Rolf Harris?
I guess Patrick hasn't heard that song.
I'm familiar with the song.
I don't think he is.
Did you just make that name up?
I think Patrick just wants to move on. I think that's Patrick's... If you want to move on, Patrick, you can just say, let's move on.
I am familiar with the song.
I don't think you are.
And I would also like to move along.
I don't think you are familiar with the song. I think you're just trying to...
Timey kangaroo dance.
I think you're just using tactics.
I'm not tactics, but perhaps tact, because it could be a little bit prejudiced to be singing the Timey Kangaroo Down song.
He asked for an insult.
He
asked for an insult.
Australian.
He asked for an Australian insult. You said you asked Jesse for an Australian insult.
Yeah.
So how can you ask Jesse for an Australian insult, but then when I make a funny little ha-ha, you decide that it's insensitive?
I admit that the line is nuanced and subjective.
No, see, that's why I think you're using tactics.
I'm not sure how to insult a star.
Because you're being hypocritical. You're being inconsistent
Sometimes
and hypocritical.
You can confuse them with British people.
This is how I've known you for a long time, Patrick, and this is how I know when I know you're using tactics.
I think you missed what ended up being a very...
Jesse
saying that he wasn't sure how to insult an Australian is somehow itself an insult.
Okay, well, first of all,
it's like I haven't bothered.
Give it the time.
Give enough thought.
Okay.
To your people.
Okay, but like
the reason
I missed what Jesse was saying is because I was saying something and I can't speak and hear other people at the same time. So maybe
come on.
So
dude.
Maybe if Jesse waited till I was
you can't multitask.
If Jesse just waited till I was done talking and then he said this thing, I would have a much better chance of hearing him.
I was telling you guys, we got to...
Oh, I see what that means.
We got to get
I'm
one
just
of them,
trying to not talk yes. over each other.
We
so got to
get one of them chest timers.
Yeah.
Just like, it's not that hard to not talk over each other.
Yeah. Okay.
Speed podcast.
Our next voicemail...
Patrick disagrees.
...is from... Well, we got to look at this time here.
Our next voicemail is
from Steve, our old friend Steve, and he has a thought about the Gorn situation.
Gentlemen, I was thinking about Captain Battelle's situation with her being this strange Gorn human hybrid, and considering Strange New World's inclination to build in every possible Easter egg and connection to canon, sometimes at the detriment to storytelling, or I would argue detriment to the storytelling. And I was wondering if maybe Patel somehow would end up actually being the Gorn captain that Kirk ends up fighting in the arena. And maybe she's turned so Gorn and she's trying to travel
she's
around,
so Gorn.
Waking up all the other Gorn to fight the Federation. We never see the other members of the crew. I mean, we don't know if they're Gorn or maybe a pirate crew that she's recruited to reintroduce the Gorn, to wake up the Gorn or something. And it would be interesting and probably sad that these great characters are not making their own stories and just building in far too many of these Easter eggs. Keep up the good work. Thanks.
Thanks, Agamas.
Steve is great. We met in D.C. He was in town visiting, and we got to have lunch, and it was a fantastic...
Oh, really?
Yeah, a while back. It was wonderful. Well, so, thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Agamas.
I was... Dan, what's your thinking?
Well, my thinking was, first of all, it's unfair that Jesse is allowed to come up with an Australian insult burn, but I'm not. But that's okay.
I know, right?
But that's neither here nor there.
I'm into it.
I just don't give them any time at all.
That was one of my potential issues with the whole second episode where they tied in Q with
Trelane.
Yeah. Now I was like mixed about that because part of me liked the Q tie-in with Trelane, but part of me was also it's weird. I was like kind of into it, but I kind of wasn't at the same time. I had mixed, I guess that's what you call mixed feelings about something.
I think
that was my concern is that maybe they're trying too hard to keep tying everything together.
I agree with Steve that there's a potential concern here for the reasons both you and Dan cited. Now at the time in the Wedding Bell Blues,
that's what it was called.
Doesn't bother me so much in part because that was a theory that was developed in the fandom long ago.
Yeah.
It's been incorporated into novelizations and other sort of beta canon, not a
It sounds crazy, but it's true.
Because that shit was back in the 60s, man.
Yeah, Trelane was on TOS, and then after,
if you insist.
After the introduction of Q, who was another all-powerful, playful person, the idea of Trelane being a young Q is a funny idea. So, yeah, not so bad. But I am, like Steve, I'm super curious about where this whole hybrid Gorn thing is going, and I hadn't thought about it, Captain Patel becoming the actual Gorn that we meet in Arena later on.
I find this surprising.
That's a cool idea, though.
But I had previously thought maybe similar to the Klingons getting a genetic disease that gives them smooth foreheads in Enterprise, maybe they were going to have the Gorn become more human-like by the genes spread through them somehow, like Battelle's genes, and they all become like more sentient and human.
They're all blending together.
I'm not sure if I'd be into that. I'm suspicious of this whole Gorn-Battelle plot.
Red alert!
Withholding any judgment until the end because I'm ready for the writers to give me something awesome and do some excellent character stuff with it. And
I'm all ears.
It has been interesting to see how Pike has reacted and all that, but I am a little nervous. And what I will say is I think we haven't covered Arena yet, so we might want to consider
we haven't done that
after the season's over. No, we haven't. After the season's over, maybe we aim to try
we've referenced it so many times.
Take a look at
a lot.
Take a look at that. And Dan cited it during our episode 300, the It's Got Star Trek technical manual. Mm-hmm. I think, Dan, you cited that as being one of your first memories of Star Trek was from Arena. Yeah.
That very scene, the most famous scene from it.
Yeah. So we'll keep an eye out, Steve. I don't know if that's exactly what would happen, but I am sort of nervous about where things are going.
Steve. Hey, check this out.
Better look out. Wait, sorry.
I interrupted you, Jesse. That was my fault. I'll take the blame for that.
I wasn't saying anything.
But I interrupted you, though. I was just talking about that. Okay.
The salon has eaten its tail.
A lot.
Isn't that cute, what I just did? You want me to do it again?
Yeah.
Do it again.
Isn't that cute?
The salon has eaten its tail.
Whoops. Wait, I'm going to do it one more time. Wait, okay. I'm going to do it right this time. Okay.
Please.
The salon has eaten its tail.
A lot.
Isn't that cute?
The salon ate its tail a lot.
The salon has eaten its tail.
A lot.
Kawat Malat.
Isn't that cute?
Oh, yeah, the Kawat Malat.
Isn't that cute what I did there with that sound?
Yes, Dan, it's very cute.
Isn't that cute?
Kawat Malat.
Jesse, can you just tell him it's cute? So
it's cute, dude.
We can move along to the last voicemail.
How do you spell Kawat Malat?
You'll figure it out.
It's a Q.
While you're looking for Kawat Malat, I will play
Pram-a-lot.
The last voicemail, which is indeed, as Dan mentioned earlier, Dan mentioned Jesse from Open Pike. And this is Jesse from Open Pike.
Get out.
Hi, it's Got Star Trek. It's Jesse from Open Pike Night. Let me first say that I am really loving your coverage of season 3 of Strange New Worlds, but I have to call to talk about the Geordi Eye thing.
What are you doing?
I'm calling a podcast.
What the fuck was that?
Oh, so you had asked, like, if Mbenga can regenerate Gamble's eyes, then shouldn't
Wait, I'm sorry. What happened there? What was that?
Okay.
Something short-circuited the podcast.
I haven't heard this yet because Jesse sent this in right before we recorded. But using context clues, I think his child walked in and was like, "What are you doing?" And then the look on Dan's face, Dan looked around like there was a fucking ghost child standing behind him.
There was somebody here.
I know. That was great. All right. That was wonderful. Your child has wonderful timing. That's amazing. I got a real kick out of that.
I've rewound it, and now we will continue the question.
Thank you for that.
To talk about the Geordi Eye thing.
What are you doing?
I'm calling a podcast. So you had asked, like, if Mbenga can regenerate Gamble's eyes, then shouldn't Geordi have the same option?
Right.
And I'm obligated to point out that he does. In the TNG episode Loud as a Whisper, Pulaski offers to repair his eyes either through ocular implants or like surgery on his optical nerve and then replicated eyes. And it would give him normal vision, but there'd be a big risk. And he tells her that he doesn't want that. I wanted you to know it was an option, but Geordi chose against it. Anyways, keep up the good work, gentlemen. I love you.
That guy's great.
Thanks, Agamus.
I love you. I love you too.
Thanks, Jesse.
And when his
offspring. That's an episode of Star Trek too.
Yeah.
Have we done that one?
We have not.
When is?
I mean, that's a great episode.
When his child spoke for the second time after you rewound it, it surprised me again. Yeah. That's on me.
I mean, it was the only time the child spoke. But it
happened again. I got surprised again. Yeah. That was great. That was.
The human mind is a peculiar thing, isn't it, Dan?
That was
peculiar.
That was really funny. Okay. Well,
I think very good point.
I think it's a good.
We have all been reminded of that fact.
Yeah, but I think...
and of Pulaski's meddling.
But the thing is,
Pulaski's ableist meddling.
Okay, but like they didn't mention growing his eyes back. She just said we can like give you implants or replicate your eyes. Whereas Mbenga was like, we can grow your eyes back.
That's the same thing. I think that's
they put some shit on his face.
Genetic. I goop, but they slurp it in there,
but,
and it turns into.
Mbenga didn't mention anything about there being a risk.
All right, you're right. He didn't mention
he
anything
has a
about
positive
a risk.
Bedside.
Pulaski
manner.
Mentioned something that was a little bit of a risk, but
she has a negative bedside manner.
So I'm just saying, I mean, I guess you like. What's the risk? Is the risk that he won't ever be able to see anything again?
I'm going to stress the main point that Jesse was making is that it was Geordi's choice not to forget about the risk or not. I know you're factoring the risk in, but I also always took it to be making the point that in the 24th century, it wouldn't even be an issue. Geordi's perfectly happy with the situation.
I see Jesse's point, and I mostly agree with it, but I still think that there's a little bit of a discrepancy, because in the past they make it. The reason why I say there's a risk is because Mbenga makes it seem like it's super easy.
Yeah.
But then Pulaski's saying like, oh, it's risky. So which also it makes it implies that the same thing.
Yeah, but Pulaski's kind of lame.
Different characters, different point. Jesus fucking Christ!
What the fuck happened?
That was my bag. I'm really sorry about
my bag, baby.
That's my bag. Sorry.
Long story short, obviously different perspectives on that are all rational and reasonable. But to me it's irrelevant because the literary point
is irrelevant.
Exactly. The point of Geordi choosing not to do something is a specific point.
But my
versus
point,
an emergency surgery not working.
My point wasn't
because of a demon.
My point wasn't a literary point. My point was a consistency point. My point was that
matter.
And it does matter because you're saying. You've said it doesn't matter at all. There's no.
We talked about this last week.
There's no reason to follow any sort of rules whatsoever.
It's not what I said.
Yes, that is kind of what you're saying. You're saying there's no point in being consistent. There's no point in following rules.
We had this conversation last week, so I will refer people to last week's episode of It's Got Star Trek.
Yeah, but I'm just
302.
You
know what's consistent?
I'm just saying,
taking a break.
Wait.
Jesse's right.
Okay. I'm just saying. Okay, my whole point was just that. My initial point was that there was an inconsistency between the ability to do something back then and their ability to do something in the future. And yes, Geordi was given the option. He said no, but they still made it seem like it was super easy in the past and it made it seem difficult in the future. And I say that that's inconsistent. Okay. That's all I'm saying.
I don't disagree with that very specific point.
Throw that in there. You're damn right. Dan, you're so right. I mean, you may be stupid, but you're so right. Mr. Backhanded compliment guy.
I assure you it was not a backhanded compliment.
Oh, it was something else. It was a reverso pat. It meant to be a butt pat, but it was a ball smack
When we get back from the break, I'm fairly confident that we're going to start talking about the Saylot who ate its own tail. Be right back.
That's it. Let's get going.
Energize.
Oh man, that's funny.
We didn't talk about the episode at all that break.
And we're back.
Bad place to be right now, unless you're fond of choking to death on your own gurgling blood.
Shit. How about that?
So watching this episode.
Of course.
Watching this episode, and I've mentioned this, that this is a passive game that I play. And certainly, I think anybody who's a longtime audience listener can play, which is you're watching the episode and you're like, which of these clips is Dan guaranteed to clip? Yes. And that was one of them. When I heard Pelio say that, I was like, Dan is clipping that clip.
Yep. That's true.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Wait, you already did that.
It's episode 303 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast. And
thrilling.
We are talking about the Saylot who ate its tail.
A lot.
I will start off by saying
it will never stop.
I thought this was a great episode. I have a few nitpicks, mm-hmm. and they're not necessarily small nitpicks. The medium picks, I don't know. But I was thinking about it. And I was like, you know what? This season, I've really enjoyed this season. But we've had maybe more nitpicks, a few more critiques than last season. Maybe mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
Sort of anecdotally feels like that a little bit. Mm-hmm. This episode I thought was like pretty rocking. It seems to be pretty well received by the fan base. There were a couple of sort of things that stood out to me that we'll get to later.
What
did you guys think?
I like this episode too. I like that this was the episode where Kirk for the first time gets to work with his soon to be TOS crew.
Yeah.
I like that. And I kind of like how like it's like Pike mentors Kirk a little bit and sort of like, here we go.
Mr. Sneezy.
It will never stop.
Not good.
All right, good.
Is that only two?
He never only sneezes twice.
There we go.
There it is. All right.
He is clearly agitated.
What we're going to do is we're going to have a special Patreon presentation. We're going to string together all the times Jesse sneezes.
Oh, man.
I am so deeply bored.
All right, Dan. I do believe you were in the middle of a point.
Oh yeah, it was just that was basically it. Where it's like Kirk gets to work with the TOS mm-hmm. crew for the first time, and where Pike sort of mentors Kirk thing, and it makes it sort of the transition, which was not a smooth transition initially because it was just kind of an incidental change actors kind of thing. And they, and that's another case where I guess you could say they tried to bridge the gap and, and
went, but in a positive way.
It kind of worked.
In a more constructive way.
And I think they should have
organic.
And I think they should have kept it to those two things.
Yeah.
It felt like they, I don't know if they had 10 minutes they needed to fill near the end, but like, I'm not sure if I loved how it ended, that whole tacked on thing with the, the human ship.
Oh, the
thing.
Twist.
Oh, yeah. No, let's, I'm not. Yeah.
Let's get back to that because that, yeah, that is one of the.
That's not the best.
Yeah, I mean, like, let's get back to it. But I thought I wanted to mention that before I forgot because, like, I like those two first things. And I think if they could have just stuck to those two things, it would have been a little better. And
because in addition to all the adjectives you just you used to describe those things, the positive things, I tried to add in there organic as well. I thought it was the story they chose. Put Kirk together with his future crew and the Pike mentorship in an organic way. And that's what a good story happens. And I'll bring up again, one of our critiques of previous episodes has been like in the space adventure hour, we were like, yeah, that's fun. The mystery was kind of lame and nonsensical. So that took away from it a little bit. And then in Through the Lens of Time, again, a fun, interesting, mind-bending puzzle, but the actual like, you know, solutions and stuff. We're kind of like, what?
It's just kind of like,
there's
stuff
a little,
happened.
There's a little bit of that in this episode.
This
however,
is written in Chinese.
However, however, this episode overall was a gripping adventure with some great character beats. And we got to see Paul Wesley, who my issue, I like Paul Wesley as an actor. And I'm always really engaged when he's on screen. My main thing is he doesn't come off as kind of Kirkish.
What's
to
the
me?
Problem?
But, well, he demonstrated in this episode he can hold the attention.
It's
he can be the center seat.
It's the problem with having someone be Kirk is you don't want him to like be doing a William Shatner as like Kirk impression.
Right.
Like you don't want him to
a thankless position to
be. Yeah, because like you don't want him to do the cadence.
Yeah.
Like he did that when he in the
Space Adventure Hour,
but because it was being silly.
The Last Frontier.
Yeah, but so you don't want him to do an impression like a Shatner as Kirk impression. You want it to almost be as far away from Kirk as, but it's really tricky because that's why I kind of forgive them for
tricky.
That.
Tricky.
That's why I kind of forgive them for that, because it's like, what can you really do? Because there's only one Captain Kirk. And if they're going to have someone else play it,
it
needs to kind of have its own life. Yeah. But at the same time, it is like, it is kind of weird. It's not my favorite either. But I thought it was I was leading somewhere with that.
Just
look at my notes. I was gonna say that.
Zanzibar.
I liked how disrespectful Scotty Zanzibar.
Well, because I thought you had a cool word, and Jesse was
Zanzibar.
Like, that's a cool word, and
Bananarama.
To his credit, Zanzibar is a cool word. Bananarama is that a. I guess it's a word, even if it's a proper noun.
Right. It's
I pick neither option.
It's not a real word.
It's not a vocabulary word.
Sorry. I pick neither option.
Sounds good.
All right, but
you
were saying
a little creepy.
You were enjoying how Scotty
was totally disrespecting Kirk the whole episode. Like Scotty was like being insubordinate. Like Scotty was like being kind of an asshole to Kirk that whole episode.
Been like this a lot, where he kind of wants to do his own thing, and he gets a little agitated when people don't, you know, let him do his own thing.
Well, Scotty's always just kind of like, I can't do it. I need more time. It's more of like an anxiety thing that comes off with Scotty. But this, he seemed like straight up like looking down on Kirk and being like, you're a fucking piece of shit, you know, basically. and like all this time, Kirk was taking it from Scotty. Like he was like the whole time, like Kirk is like not giving Scotty any back talk, and Scotty's talking back the whole time. And then at one point, Scotty goes, when Kirk is like, I don't pick what I just played, where he says, I pick neither option. Mm-hmm. Scotty goes, okay, that's a bold, and if you don't mind me saying, highly unorthodox choice. Mm-hmm. Uhura finally steps in. She's like, okay, to like push Scotty aside. And then she tries to be diplomatic, and she's like, sir, he's just concerned. Mm-hmm. They have our crew, and the planet they're headed for is inhabited. We won't be able to warn them with, and she's being really diplomatic. And then he snaps at her. Kirk snaps at her. He should have been talking. He should have like been putting Scotty in his place, because Scotty was being a piece of shit towards Kirk. And then Uhura was trying to like, you know, bring them all together. Yeah. And then he snaps at her instead. Yeah. And I thought that was kind of fucked up, you know. But I did actually have a list of all the times that I felt Scotty was being like kind of disrespectful to Kirk.
Right. Well, that's we want to hear that list. But before we hear that list, I think it's an excellent point in time.
Wait.
To mention that. Kirk. It really threw me off there.
Helm, take evasive action.
That what this episode does very nicely is it demonstrates that Kirk does have a very different command style, and this is a proto version of it, right? They make the point.
Of course.
They make the point overtly that he is, I think it's Chapel, right, who makes the point that he still hasn't sort of figured out his command style. But I thought it was astutely observed by some people on Reddit and social media. I saw it in multiple places, and I sadly forget who said it, otherwise I would give them credit. But a few people pointed out that a major difference between like Kirk and Pike is really into like a very flat hierarchy, and he just wants people to like come up to him and give him ideas and stuff like that, and he's like cool with that.
Right.
Doesn't matter what their rank is or whatever. Kirk is not, it's not like Kirk is like some sort of like hierarchical piece of shit or whatever, but Kirk wants to like ask questions and have everybody be ready to be like, here's the deal. Yeah. But he wants to have some structure to it. It's just a different way to do things. And so he becomes overwhelmed when he's got all these people who are being Pike bridge officers, where they're just sort of shouting out stuff. They're like, here's the deal. Here's my thoughts. And Kirk is like, I don't know what the fucking to do here.
Yeah.
And Spock has to go talk to him, which is a brilliant scene. Excellent dialogue between the two of them where they demonstrate how Spock is a positive influence on Kirk, and his command style brings him back to Earth. No pun intended. Would that be a pun? Because it's a space show.
Nah.
Probably not. It was funny how like Spock was all like,
"If I may interrupt,"
and there's this like emergency scene going on, and then Kirk's like,
"Oh, you already have."
Yeah. Like he's all like talking to Spock like he's like, fine, I mean, you already have, you know.
Part of the brilliance of that scene is,
well, I thought it was funny because that under normal circumstances, like that would be like something to say to someone, like to point out that they were being rude, because it's like, you're asking if you want to interrupt. Oh, you already have. Yeah. But it's like Spock is totally warranted to interrupt because there's some crazy chaos going on
their
around
ship
them.
Is literally just like in pieces.
Yeah, and then Kirk's all acting like, oh, you already rude and interrupted.
And
you
why know? That was great is that's a very Kirk thing to do, right? That's something you would see Shatner do on TOS or in the movies, sort of make a quip like that in a serious circumstance. And then the next thing he says, right? So as their conversation continues, Spock is trying to talk about the situation at hand, and Kirk just starts talking about this chess game.
Right.
And Spock is kind of like, what the fuck is he talking about? And that was another common thing that Kirk would do, where he would just start talking about some other thing, and then kind of like Rachel Maddow style, like all of a sudden you're like, oh, here's how it applies to this scenario.
This is how she's tying it together.
But did the chess conversation actually tie back to this situation?
I took it thematically, because Kirk was saying like, I almost had her. It was all about Kirk's relationship to the captain and the position of the captaincy and whether or not he yet deserved to
be
there.
I guess shows usually hit you more over the head with it, where they like talk about something that seems unrelated and then someone's like, chocolate chips. And then they go off and solve the puzzle. And it's like, what did you just say? Chocolate chips.
Chocolate
and they're
chips.
Like, yes, precisely, chocolate chips. And then they run off and solve the day somehow.
In this case, there's some added subtext for longtime Star Trek fans who know that on TOS, Kirk always beat Spock. Spock could never beat Kirk at chess. And it was a peculiar thing because everyone's like, oh, Vulcans are so logical. The gag
seems to be my specialty.
The gag at the time in TOS days, because I think sometimes people forget that Spock's whole logic thing was not meant to be the way you're supposed to be. Right. Mm-hmm. Just like McCoy's all emotional thing is not the way you're supposed to be. Kirk represented sort of the melding of the two. So Spock being all logical did not necessarily give him an advantage in
that is illogical
in a game like chess. And so Kirk was always beating Spock. But here Kirk is saying he never could beat his captain. And so I think they're meant to subtly sort of position us.
Who's Kirk's captain?
Kirk's not quite, her name was, Varick?
Varel.
Varel.
Oh,
Varel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's the deal? Like, how many Vulcans have a name that starts with a consonant, then has an apostrophe and another consonant?
All of them. Well, the women in particular.
Yeah, it seems like the women mostly have that.
Like
yeah.
T'Pol. And T'Pring.
T'Pring.
And Patrell and Patong and
Patong
and Topang
Patanga Jang
and Topanga. Remember Topanga?
Oh no!
Was she a Vulcan on Boy Meets World?
Yeah, I think so. Topanga.
Seems like it,
you know, I think you're right.
Yeah, she was.
Looks like it.
You got a little creepy.
Your bomb's out the window.
And Mr. Cooper was a Klingon. He was Mr. Cooper.
Cooper.
Cooper. Mr. Cooper.
I didn't watch that show.
Nobody watched Mr. Cooper hanging with Mr.
No.
Cooper.
I don't. I knew it was a show, but yeah. I don't
it was a couple years it. Below you, because it was like at the end of my watching that type of TV life. That yeah. afternoon,
I
after
watched.
School.
I watched Hanging with right. Mr. Cooper.
Yeah, yeah. You and I did because it was on before we. I don't know.
It was on Toy Boat
before we started BBSs or something like right. that to occupy our time.
You all right?
There was a period where I just didn't watch TV for like 5 or 6 years. Or
yeah, it's probably a good idea. Maybe we should get back.
When
to
I was
there.
In my early.
You know, it might not feel like it, but you made the right call.
All right, so this episode, interesting, fun, a lot of cool stuff. It starts out with very bored Kirk, very bored.
I am so deeply bored.
In this one episode,
you can't blame him.
Kirk has a lot of character development, and sometimes you're like, it's a lot to squeeze into one. But I thought it was again organically done, very well written, yep. very well structured story. So I bought all of that, and I thought Paul Wesley did a great job of carrying all the emotional weight of all of that. And I was saying before, and he can hold the camera, which is important for, I mean, it's important for a lot of characters, but particularly for characters that are sort of central. You're setting this guy up to be fucking Captain Kirk. You should be fucking engaged when you're watching.
Speaking of holding the camera, I know we're supposed to talk about this later, but when they zoomed in, when the ship zoomed in and saw there was an American flag on that alien ship, why was it shaky cam? Why was it shaky hand cam?
Because that was the Battlestar Galactica. They borrowed that Battlestar Galactica camera.
I know, but at least in Battlestar Galactica, it's supposed to be from the point of view of the viewer, even though it didn't make any sense in Battlestar.
Was it a probe? Did they show them shooting a probe, maybe?
No, I don't think so. So in Battlestar Galactica, it didn't make sense, but you could forgive it because it was supposed to be from the point of view of the viewer. It was obviously
it's like a camera locked onto a fighter.
It was basically trying to imitate like that style, like, you know, out in space, obviously, and it was for the pleasure of. It was from the point of. It wasn't
for the pleasure of the queen.
It wasn't. It wasn't from a camera that existed in universe. Okay, this is a camera that existed in universe that, as far as I could tell, was not a probe. It was just a camera on the ship. They didn't indicate that there was any probe. Even if it was a probe, why would it be all shaky like that?
Stylistic. A probe.
Yeah, I don't know.
The production design.
Well, I mean, it was Obviously, it was stylistic, but it didn't make any sense.
Look, and this is something we've talked about in a lot of the modern live action Trek. Strange New Worlds is no stranger to it.
Your bum's out the window.
The production design is out of this fucking world. Again, no pun intended. The production design is great, but
you shut down on me.
There is a tendency. I think there was a little bit more on.
You said moron.
There was a little more on Discovery, and there was a lot in Section 31, but there's a tendency to going a little ridiculous, getting a little too overly stylistic, like the spinning the camera around, and you know, sometimes that works, often it doesn't.
Yeah.
Right. This episode didn't have too much of that. Most of these episodes, like space shots, were glorious. Were amazing. There was a lot of beautiful, like one of those things where you're like, oh, any frame of this looks cool. Whether it was the Farragut lost, like floating all cold in space.
I like watching the planet blow up.
The monster ship that had a face for some reason.
Yeah, I know that. That a lot of that didn't make any sense. It looked cool. It looked cool as shit.
It looked cool.
And when it blew up at the end, it made it almost look like gory because it looked like a monster.
Yes.
A ship blowing up and gory, the way its gory, face was gory. Blowing up, it made it look like bloody and gory, even though it had nothing to do with blood and gore. Which was kind of, it was an interesting effect. Now,
beautiful image.
It did make no sense.
It was peculiar from like an engineering standpoint.
Yeah, like
unless their whole goal was like, our ship is scary, so you're going to shit your pants when we come up here. Because it didn't seem like that was their tactic. It wasn't like they were pirates and they were scaring people. It just looked like they went around eating ships.
I mean, so this whole thing, it kept reminding me of like...
The Borg?
No, it didn't. It didn't remind me of...
Because they were in a lot of ways, they were the Borg, right?
The Borg.
They steal stuff and incorporate it into their ship.
A bee.
A duck.
A duck.
I'm about to paw.
All right, that's a new one. that definitely caught me off guard, as the kids say.
It actually it reminded me more of the Reapers from Firefly, except a less horrific version.
Yeah.
The Reapers were absolutely unsettling, nightmarish, horrific, like humans. But they weren't
as big.
They weren't as big. No.
The ships weren't as big.
No, they weren't. But it was the same idea of these sort of like this mystery ship like on the edge of space, like eating up everything like in its way. And like, so I just didn't understand, like, so it's been in space for 200 years, right? Now I asked ChatGPT how many
Didn't you watch South Park last night?
No, I didn't actually. I haven't watched it yet.
All right, never mind.
But
just to explain, because these are evergreen podcasts, there's a South Park episode about ChatGPT.
Yeah, I watched the first 5 minutes and it was getting late, so I was like, I'm going to watch it later. So I know it's about that.
But side note, I'm curious. What is late for Dan? Old man. What is late for Dan?
I don't know. It just depends on when.
I get WhatsApp messages from me from some peculiar hours. And yeah. I'm a pretty late night kind of guy.
Yeah, I have weird hours. All I right. do have weird hours.
Right. Did you say Weird Al? You have Weird Al? Sorry.
I know.
That was on me. Okay, please continue.
So what I was going to say is I asked ChatGPT how many people it would take starting off to have in 200 years 7,000 people.
Good question. Clever question.
Yeah.
I get it.
Clever girl. And it said, assuming there was no major setbacks and assuming that if it was through via couples.
TFR, total fertility rate of two?
Four children.
TFR of four.
Four children.
Which is higher than the replacement rate, the replacement TFR would be 2.1. The 0.1 accounts for youth deaths.
Mega fertility.
Yeah, so it said that if in 200 years, if assuming four children, it said you could do it with 28 people is what it said. With 28 people, you could get 7,000 in 200 years, assuming four children. Now, I didn't...
Remind me, how many people did they say? How many people off?
They never said. In the picture, they only showed nine people.
Yeah.
They only showed nine in the picture, but I'm assuming there were more. Yeah. Now, what I didn't ask is how often are they having children? Yeah. But that's kind of irrelevant, whatever, because like the point is apparently it can happen like that. It seems like a lot to me, but you know, things can multiply pretty quickly.
And also they could be having 10 kids.
It's sort of abstract.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the Fibonacci sequence or something like that was supposed to be like a model for rabbit breeding, but it had absolutely nothing to do with rabbit breeding. They just decided that this is how rabbits the rate at which they that's neither here nor there.
I had no idea it had anything to do with
it was discovered and they were like, this is how quickly rabbits breed, and it turns out nobody ever did a study. They just, the person back then hundreds of years ago, just decided it was true. But it turned out that had Fibonacci sequence had many other uses, so it was okay. So you're starting with 28 people, 28 to 30 people. You got 7,000. How do you get this giant ship? Now, on the one hand, I can see it because this ship is your whole world, right? Mm-hmm. So every single resource you pick up, everything you do in your life is dedicated to making this ship badass.
Right.
But there's something to be said about being surrounded by, like, having an entire planet worth of resources to draw from, which they did not have.
No.
They just had this ship.
They're just nomads.
How are they able? So on the one hand, I can see them making the ship this big because it's their whole world. But on the other hand, because they're so limited in what they can do and where they can go and what they can access, how can they make this ship so big? And they're like, and they say like, oh, well, they've just been scavenging around. They don't have warp drive. Space is fucking big and empty.
Yeah.
Like, they're not going to, without warp drive, you're not going to come across that many people.
They launched before the first contact with Vulcans.
Right. And Palea was even like, this was before warp drive. Yeah. So you're not going to come across that many people. Like, you're not going to have a planet to hang back on and be able to like figure shit out. You're like doing this all from the inside of the ship, maybe landing on a planet every once in a while.
That's,
I guess,
space trash.
I guess they could land on a planet every once in a while to do their shit.
Space
trash. But like,
you're thinking it really should be more like 1,000 years or something, because it takes them a while to get to the first place.
I just had a hard time believing that not only was it that big, but that it was that intricate. Like the thing had a big they made this big skull face. Mm-hmm. It not only had tentacles, but they extended the tentacles, like extended. It had this crazy
and
umbilical.
More advanced. They said more advanced than anything they'd ever seen.
Yeah, right. And like, the umbilicals and the inside had all these like seemingly automated inside tendrils.
It looked
going
more
around.
Like organic tree roots.
Yeah,
or something,
it was cool. Yeah. It was cool. I know we just had an argument earlier about the particulars don't matter. I say they do, and Patrick says it depends. I'm not trying to bring that argument back up. What I am saying is, I think there is a point where we have to say that's fucking a little bit much. Mm. It's like if you, like, for example, if you're watching a movie and you see this tiny house on the outside and then you go inside and suddenly the house looks like five times as big. I mean, that takes you out of it. It breaks immersion a little bit.
Do you know, real briefly, it's very important that we mention now. I don't know if you guys heard about this.
Hey, you heard about this? Hey, you guys, you heard about this?
I didn't see this, but I heard about this. There is an Easter egg here, and it's relevant to what Dan just said about walking into a small house, and then the house looks all big on the inside, because...
Flight of the Navigator?
No. There is a Doctor Who TARDIS.
Shit.
on the, I think it's on one of the nacelles of the Enterprise when it's inside the ship. And you can, it's very small, but you can see, it's very clear when you see it in a still frame. And you can go to the internet and type Enterprise TARDIS or something similar.
TARDIS.
And see a picture. It was a very cute little Easter egg for our Doctor Who fans.
That is pretty cute, man.
Thrilling.
Oh, did that say thrilling?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it might say throwing, and I was confused.
Trilling.
Thrilling.
There we go. Okay.
Trilling. So anyway, look, the Klingon had Klingons had a whole empire, and they dedicate so many resources to warships, and they didn't even have anything like this. I don't know. It just seems like, dude. You know, I don't know. It just, but at the same time, it did look really cool. It was an awesome looking ship.
Sure.
That was all cool. It didn't ruin the episode for me. By any means, I don't think they needed to add that part at the end, but and there's more I have to say on that, but if we want to come back to that later, that's fine. We can come back to that later.
Well, how about this? Let's save that for the third break, because I think there's a lot to discuss about.
I mean, I did have that Scotty list.
About the thing, but yeah, I was going to say, I want to hear the Scotty list, and then if we have time, maybe we'll talk about some of my nitpicks, otherwise we'll save that for the third break.
Your nipples picks?
Nipple picks.
Your nipple picks.
Let's hear that list of times that Scotty was insubordinate. Like when he mentions John Logie Baird.
Oh yeah, he says what does he say?
He says everybody knows John Logie Baird.
Yeah.
Who was a Scottish inventor who was one of the key contributors to the development of the television.
What in Baird's name happened here?
Now he's that guy Baird. Not James Beard, who was known for cooking things.
Yes.
Not that guy. Who has an award for cooking. He gives him, there's a James Beard Award.
Yeah.
He's a good cook.
Yeah.
It's James Beard. But
thank you for providing that.
For that guy, Beard. Dave Beard, his name is
James. That's just a local denizen of our region.
You better stop doing your job, you daft piece of.
So
I did like the Scotty just talking to the ship / himself, which is something Scotty's always done.
So, okay, first of all, James Doohan, Patrick. Doohan.
James Doohan?
Doohan.
I believe it's Doohan.
Doohan. I feel like, Patrick, one time you said that James Doohan did not get along with William Shatner. True or false?
I just think that's just general knowledge. They weren't.
I think most
fans
of those
of each other.
Most of those guys didn't get along with.
Yeah. Well, James Doohan in particular was not
So
fan.
Maybe.
I don't think they, like, you know, they weren't like physically fighting each other.
It wasn't a big deal.
No, I know.
They
but
were
I'm just saying, like,
professionals.
Well,
they were both, Shatner and Doohan were both Canadians.
So who do you think had more issue with Shatner, Doohan or Takei?
Yes.
I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
Okay. Well,
I mean, I could suppose.
Right
I could
in the
face. I could consider I could what do you call it? Not conjugate. I could
pontificate?
Yes.
speculate.
Sporculate.
Yeah. Snorfulus.
Damn the crew and pervert the taken to the own.
No, I was just wondering. I was like, maybe they made Scotty like a jerk to Kirk as a
jerk.
Kirk is a jerk
because
you said
like
that on purpose.
As like a joke because like James Dwin was didn't like Kirk. No, probably not. Anyway, Kirk. Okay, number one. This out of 8 points. Kirk is like, we got to press on with speed, and Scotty goes, ha ha, what speed? He's like, with what speed? Yeah. You know, he was like from the start. He's like. Starting to be a little condescending, like laughing in his face, being like, oh, whatever, dude. Yeah. Then when Scotty is referring to Kirk, he's like, captain, acting captain, commander, what? What is this guy?
Which is both funny and disrespectful. And you'd kind of be like, you went through Starfleet Academy. I'm pretty sure they would teach you the protocol.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
he's just
still a funny scene.
Obviously disrespectful.
Yeah, a little bit.
And then like number three, this is kind of not so much because it was pretty true, but he was like, Scotty was just like, basically it was just like, maybe your ship's just too fucked up for them to care about it, essentially.
Yeah. I don't even think it was a maybe about it.
Yeah.
He was like pretty much like, your ship is all fucked up.
But he was like kind of chuckling while he said it, just kind of like, because Kirk recommended, it's like, why didn't they go for us? He's like, because have you seen this piece of shit? Number four, later on, Kirk's like, how long is it going to take to fix this shit? And Scotty's like, it's going to take 2 days. And then Kirk's like, well, why don't we do it so it doesn't explode or whatever. and then Scotty's like, that was like he's kind of that was like a fuck you laugh.
Yeah.
Like,
a little bit.
It was just like so funny, Captain Kirk. Acting Captain.
Captain Kirk.
Kirk is like, let's get to the planet before they do. And Scotty's like, He's like, you're not asking us to warp past him. And then he said, then he goes, which is like already like, you're at, what the fuck? When a captain gives you an order, you don't go big, go like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? And like, but then he's like, and then he goes, if you think we can do that, then your bum's out the window, dude. That's what he said. He said those words.
Yeah.
Bums.
Then you, so, which is also like,
is that a, I presume it's a colloquialism.
I'm sure it is. Yeah. Yeah. So, and
your bum's out the window.
So, which is like, it's not something you say to a captain. All this is basically amounts to Scotty laughing at Kirk and saying like disrespectful, like
not appreciating the chain of command in this particular situation.
Right.
Yeah. Well, fuck that shit.
And then and then they're talking about like Scotty's like, oh, we're in deep shit. And then Kirk's like, I get it, I get it. And Scotty goes, I don't think you do. You know.
Yeah.
And then
for real,
but,
dude.
And if that were bad,
prove it right, but still.
Still, but then he goes on to say, I get you got a raw deal. No one can fault you for that. That's fucking condescending and disrespectful. It's being like, I get it. You're in a tough spot.
Well, it was the way he said it that was condescending. Because you could send that exact message in a non-condescending way, in a supportive, constructive way. And I agree with you.
Yeah.
Scotty was definitely doing it in a way that was meant to be condescending.
Yeah, it's like nobody.
Hey guys.
He's like nobody expects you. It's like nobody expects you to be good, and you're kind of not being good, but it's okay. It's okay that you suck because nobody expected you to be good. You know, number seven, later on, their ship conks out. This was right after Kirk was all cocky about it. He's like, everyone can buy me drinks. And then Scotty, he all busts in and he's all pissy. He's like, plasma manifolds are blown out. And Kirk goes, well, we'll fix them. And Scotty's like, they are gone beyond repair. And he's all super pissed off. And forgetting that and the way he says it is like, once again, this is something you kind of have to, I guess, hear. I'm not going to be able to express it perfectly, but he says it in this way that's like, he's kind of forgetting who he's talking to, basically, when he says it. When he could say it, it's like, oh, things are really messed up, but he's just like, he's like basically yelling at Kirk. He's basically like, it's like someone's like, hey, do this. And they're like, I can't do this because blah, you know, like that
because
kind of thing.
Because blah. Speaking of blah, we have two items left.
One item left.
We're going to save that item.
Wow.
Save it.
That's, when we get back from break.
That's a teaser.
We got to stay on format here. So we're going to take a break. And then when we get back, we will have Dan's final list item.
Final place.
It's going to be the best one of the list. We are going to talk about this whole American business and humans and whatnot. And we're going to talk about a couple other things and then conclude our discussion and then tell you what we're going to do next week. Now, we're going to do all of that when we get back. Wait, hold on. We're going to
when we get back.
We'll be right back.
Why didn't it kill me?
Kill me.
And we are back.
Lieutenant, it's for you.
I thought that was funny, by the way, when she said that, when she did the it's for you joke, because it's the old school phone.
I enjoyed all the phone stuff. The phone stuff was good. Of course, it's a little silly.
Yeah.
I mean, this gets into like, I don't know, maybe you thought differently, Dan. I accept that it's kind of ridiculous and silly to think of Pelia having this massive quarters just filled with a bunch of junk.
Yeah.
That happens to be useful.
From the 80s.
Yeah.
And it's mostly, and like, she focused on the 80s so much.
Yeah. And the fact that she would specifically have a whole bunch of telephone handsets.
Yeah. I mean, it was pandering.
Yeah, but I liked it. It was a good idea. Yeah. It's not particularly new, the idea of using some old technology. And in some ways, it's another Battlestar Galactica reference because they had fucking hardwired phones on the Battlestar Galactica.
Right. It was funny to avoid network
intrusion by those dastardly Cylons.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it was a weird way they worded it. They said, like, it was to, insulate from jamming, I think is what they said.
Yeah.
Which is, like, I guess technically correct. It was like,
are you going to play a Spaceballs joke now?
Oh, am I supposed to?
Yes, well, I mean, I thought of getting that clip, but then I got tired. I was like, man, this would just be the part where we're like, we've been jammed.
Jammed.
Only one man would dare give me the raspberry.
Lone Star.
Yeah.
That's a good jam joke.
Yeah.
And specifically about being jammed in the
just jammed. Jam.
Just as one of those nice.
Jam it.
Yes, that's the one I really want. Not if we jam it. Lone Star is saying, not if we jam it.
I thought it was an interesting way of wording, like a wired connection insulates them from being jammed. It's like, yes, that's correct. It's just such a, to me, such a weird way of wording.
That was a weird way of wording things.
What was?
Saying weird way of wording.
Weird way.
Weird way.
It was a triple alliterative.
What was? A weird way of wording?
Weird way.
Triple alliterative.
What was? A weird way of wording? That was a quintuple way.
Yes.
Sabotage.
Sabotage. I'm not joking, Lee.
So she had roller skates, the cat clock, the poker visor, like what Data wears. She had an Atari, an old pink phone. She looks like she had some expensive painting back there.
Yeah,
some kind of one of those flower. What was that famous flower painting? I don't remember who does that, but
you mean a Georgia O'Keeffe? Was it a Georgia O'Keeffe?
No, it it was like an old
ye olde, like a Renaissance.
Where it was no
like
it
there was some more.
Was it a
shit.
Leonardo DiCaprio painting?
Didn't Picasso do some?
He's not that old.
Didn't he do some like normal flower shit before?
Yeah, well, he had his blue period and stuff beforehand.
I don't know.
He went into the.
There was this flower painting. Mondrian. There was this flower painting that I thought I recognized as being famous, and I'm not. I don't remember enough about art.
Was it a Monet?
I don't know. It's not important.
Or a Manet?
I don't Klimt. Care.
Klimt. Is it Gustav Klimt?
Yeah.
I think it's a Gustav.
I am so deeply bored.
So when she said, she goes like an old friend of mine once said, let there be light. She's so old that she was buds with God. Or maybe that's just her way of saying,
you know what? I didn't get, that's a good joke. That's a good joke that I did not get at the time.
I didn't think about that exactly.
Or maybe
it didn't make that much
sense. Or maybe she's just saying she's super religious. Maybe she's just
I think she's just being silly.
Because you know, like when
I think she's Lucifer.
Because you know, when people are super religious, they're like, Jesus is my pal, you know, and stuff like that. Maybe that's what she was.
But she's also she's very old. She's 5,000 years old, which is the exact age of the Earth.
I am 5,000 years old.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
It all comes together.
Yeah. Spock's like, I promise to demote you at the earliest opportunity.
Did you say your last list item? The Scotty list item.
So they present options for what to do next. And Kirk,
this guy's from Boston all of a sudden. I'm sorry. Dan seemed to take offense at that.
If I may interrupt.
If I may. I don't need chattering voices.
You got
I'm up to speed on the particulars. No need for further discussion.
A lot of good ones. A lot of potential keepers in this episode.
It's a keeper. It's a keeper there. Hey there, that's the keeper there.
Baga, baga, baga,
baga. Hey there, that's the keeper there.
Hey, ba-da-ba-da-ba-da.
They present options for what to do next.
Mm-hmm.
Kirk goes, I pick neither. And Scotty gives him some more shit.
It's a very Kirk answer.
Yeah, I guess it is. I guess you could say
like
that.
Like the
Kobayashi Maru.
He doesn't believe in a no-win scenario, so he doesn't choose any of the either of the bad options that he's given.
Okay, when Kirk goes, I pick neither, and then Scotty, of course, says...
That is a bold, and if you don't mind me saying, highly unorthodox choice.
Yeah
which is like, you
and
know...
sarcastic. He's saying
very
unorthodox
sarcastic.
Sarcastically.
Yeah. Like, he could do without all the editorializing, you know?
Yeah.
Like, sure, Kirk's having some issues, but Scotty's like... has a butt attitude about it, you know?
That's they're trying to characterize him that way on purpose. This is part of his growth curve.
Yeah, but you can tell how you're supposed to act, and I mentioned this earlier, when Uhura jumps in and she tries to mediate. Mm-hmm. She's how you're supposed to talk to a captain.
Yes.
Like, just like
sounds
trying to
like
cool
you got
things
a case
down.
Of the supposed to.
She's an expert on communications.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. That's a good point. So the way she's talking is supposed to like calm people down, whereas the way Scotty's talking just makes things worse, because he's like all hyped up and amped up and hyper and like, I'm going to make things better by being loud and fucking freaked out. I'm gonna express so much anxiety in my voice that everyone's gonna lose their shit. But of course, ironically, Kirk, she's the one that Kirk gets mad at, so whatever. But yeah, that's my list.
That's
well,
a good
hell
list.
Hell yeah, baby.
That's
list.
My list.
So briefly, I'd like to ask your all's opinions on these two items that
I don't want to give you mine.
Did bother me a little bit because I really enjoyed this episode, found it very engaging. However,
it was fun.
How did that bottle of liquor explode into such a huge ball of flame? Is that what you're going to ask?
No, I was cool with that.
I wasn't. That was too much fault. That was too much fire.
All of that's fine. That's fine by me. I couldn't care less about any of that stuff. What I cared about.
You ever tried lighting liquor on fire? It doesn't.
No.
It
depends on the proof of the liquor.
I drank
it.
You can light like 151 on fire, which I have done. There's a video of me doing that at the beach, I think.
Yeah, I bet.
But it didn't explode in a giant fireball. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you didn't shoot it with a phaser.
It just burned a little bit.
I don't know if the phaser makes a difference.
I would think it probably makes a directed energy
weapon. A phaser?
Come on, brother.
Come on, brother. Come on, brother. Okay.
You know, it might not feel like it, but you made the right call.
I have three nitpicks.
Okay.
And the main one we'll discuss at the end because it's that whole business with the twist being about the humans and the American flag and all that.
Yeah,
so we'll talk about that in the end.
Okay.
But the other two nitpicks, which I think are a shorter conversation, but I'm interested in your thoughts on this.
I'm all ears.
Again, as we mentioned, we were dissatisfied with some of the solutions. Some of the resolutions to this a few of the previous episodes were somewhat lackluster or came out of nowhere, or sort of didn't really make sense. Like the Indiana Jones bridge last week was a little, it was one of those things where
bullets.
Like, what's going on?
Bullets.
This week, I loved everything about the story. I liked the mystery. I even liked the scary monster ship and all that. Dan provided some very reasonable critiques about the logic behind it, but okay, it still looked cool and stuff. But what bothered me was first that Kirk has this whole thing where he's going to do the Kirk thing where he's like, I've got an idea. This like this crazy idea, right? Just like Dan was saying, is I'm not going to pick either of those options. I'm going to come up with this crazy cool Kirk idea.
I have an idea.
And then he doesn't tell us what it is. And we're all like, as an audience, we're like, oh my God. And then they even play the fucking music from, it's like kind of a variation on the Star Trek II. I think it's called like Kirk Fires His Weapon or something like that. I forget the exact, God damn it. I'm annoyed that I can't remember what that. Kirk's Explosive Reply from the Star Trek II soundtrack. Like, you can hear a subtle variation on that where it's giving you that exciting, like, they thought they were down and out, but Kirk's come up with an idea and they're about to kick ass. So they're doing everything about Kirk's about to kick ass. And they do end up kicking ass, but the way they kick ass is with these two things that annoyed me. The first thing was their whole plan was to detach the nacelles and then the nacelles touch the ship and then the ship just like shorts out.
I know, it just falls apart.
They never explained anything. It wasn't based on something previously said in the episode.
It was the nacelles just like flew off and now the Saelot ate its tail.
Yeah, it's like, okay, like now the ship's off.
I guess it's because the tentacles came after the nacelles and it hit itself. But why did that disable the whole ship?
I paid attention. I rewound. The tentacles don't ever touch it.
Oh, really?
I mean, it does eventually, and I think that's it. But first the nacelles hit, and then it starts shorting out.
Yeah.
I don't buy that it was very clear.
Yeah.
And okay, point number one. And again, nitpick. I'm not saying this like pissed me off.
Fuck this episode.
We'll save that for next week's episode. Sorry for the preview. That was just sort of a nitpick. I was like, okay, that's not sort of like a little bit of a letdown. I was like, what's this clever plan going to be?
Destroyer of worlds.
And then the second letdown was then they're like, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to like, it was like shoot into its mouth and the whole fucking thing. This 200-year-old, more advanced than anything any motherfucker's ever seen.
It's got a giant mouth that if you shoot three photon torpedoes inside,
it's just going to fucking blow to pieces.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I had those exact same problems.
From a thematic sense, like literally blowing up the, you know, going into the whale or whatever. I get it. And I thought the imagery, as we said earlier, the imagery, amazing. It was like a super cool image.
But why would they make it like that?
Yeah. If that was that vulnerable. It was a mediocre, it was like I don't understand. I was like, okay. Like that. So those two things were a little disappointing. Did you agree? Did it bother you? Did it not bother you? It didn't bother me that much, but it was a little bit kind of like.
Those two points are exactly what I had a problem with. Right. Those two points.
Not cool, man.
It wasn't.
Not cool.
No, I was thinking the same thing. Like, I didn't understand how the nacelles, like, shorted the whole thing out. And even if it did hit itself with the tentacles, I wouldn't even see how that would destroy the entire ship. Yeah. This big fucking ship. Yeah. You know, why would they make it? And why would it be so easy? Like you said, why would it be so easy to blow it up? If it was that easy to shoot photon torpedoes inside to blow it up, why would they make a giant mouth that looked cool?
It looked like some fucking Mad Max crazy monster mouse shit. And by the way, this is not a critique of quote unquote new Trek or any bullshit like that. Lots of Star Trek has ridiculous resolutions or uses, like Voyager would often use like some techno babble shit to resolve something. Whatever. The story could still
be good. They
were the worst. But it is always nice when you have this is a really great episode and then there's just like a few little weak points. I don't know. I'm not smart enough to come up with a solution, so I can't really complain all that much, but if I had to have a critique, those two things.
Pretty smart.
Then the final thing, and I think a perhaps more important point and less of a nitpick, is this whole twist that they're humans. Actually, I didn't have a problem with the idea like, oh, they're humans. Well, but then they started going into like telling like a very muddled message of like what, like yeah. they turned into assholes.
Yeah, it was silly.
And like, and then like Kirk is yeah. only, is Kirk only,
Kirk's is, approach is ridiculous.
So, is Kirk only feeling bad because they were humans?
Yeah, right.
And it reminded me. So my very first day. It
was on my very first day of school. It was on my very first day of school. I wanted to make sure everyone thought I was cool. It was my very first day of school.
It's a good song, Dan. And apt, because it was my first day of school. It was my first day of classes in grad school for anthropology.
Oh.
And the professor asked this question because he was showing us an article because a plane had recently crashed, and he was showing how he had multiple versions of multiple articles from around the world about the same plane crash, and how each of the articles started with how many people of that nationality where the newspaper or news source was based, and then started a discussion about like, why do we care more when it's involving people that are our tribe, right? I'm not saying that's a bad thing, this is, but it's an interesting thing.
Bottomless greed.
But like, this is an example where it actually made me a little uncomfortable that they seem to be trying to make a couple of different points about like how nice people can become assholes, like because of the environment is like, maybe that's one point. But then the other point is like, we care more that these people are dead because not only are they like humans, but they're like Americans.
Yeah, right.
And America was like the only country like that didn't get like survived after World War III, I think is what they were saying. Like,
And they couldn't resist the World War III reference. They can never resist bringing up World War III ever. It's always about World War III. Like,
World War III.
I don't know. Is this like, are they making a social point or not? And like, and like, why? I don't. This whole order guys suck. Yeah, because I don't want to think about like Kirk or these other people being all sad, being like, "Oh, they were humans."
There was that scene where they were like fighting against like Pike and Lon. By the way, it was awesome when Lon and Pike ran around the corner. Like, did you notice when they ran around the corner and the lights were on? Like after the shit was all over, Pike was all running with his arms like swishing about, and like, and when Lon was running, she looked like fucking Tina Belcher from Bob's Burgers.
I did notice because she came around first, and she really did look like Tina Belcher,
like Napoleon Dynamite or something. And Pike's hair was so crazy, and you see him like, he put his hands through his hair to straighten it out, and it just looked just as crazy. See, that's the problem with having amazing hair like all gelled up like that, is because when it goes crazy, like running your hand through is not gonna fix it,
extra crazy.
But before that, when they were fighting those aliens dudes, by the way, I think that they had that shield that absorbed the phaser fire.
Yeah.
That thing broke a little too easily. Yeah. Lon just kind of hit it with the butt of her gun, and the thing shattered. But whatever. Yeah. But like the alien picked, or not the alien.
That wasn't an alien.
No, not an alien.
I made a big deal of calling it an alien. Turns out not an alien.
It was
the Sarslik.
Do you know what's funny about this word?
Vsauslik.
It's spelled A-S-A-A-S-L-L-I-C-H.
Vsauslik.
I'll say that again.
Chachka.
No, how it's spelled.
A-S-A-A-S-L-L-I-C-H.
Vsauslik.
An ass-lick.
Ass-ass-lick, yeah.
Son of a bitch.
Ass-lick, I didn't catch that.
Ass-ass-lick.
Vsauslik.
A-S-A-A-S. Ass-ass-lick is what it's called. Which is
Destroyer of Worlds.
But when
I thought you were going to bring up the Aldentium.
I'm glad you brought it up.
What the fuck was that?
Aldentium. It's like
Aldentium. I looked up. I was like, that can't be real. And I was like, no, it's just from this fucking episode, because they were just like,
because they were thinking about pasta.
They were thinking about like the texture, like how much bite your new
bite.
Right.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
it's like, is that? I was even thinking, I was like, is this a metaphor, or are they just fucking with us?
It's like undercooked. Because
they're taking it all serious. They're like, here's the deal. This motherfucker loves to eat some Aldentium.
Yeah, right. Solvage. No, when
this monster face is just gonna chew down on some fucking noodles.
When the meanie human. Like pick up Pike and the meanie human's about to hurt Pike and then they let him go. Mm-hmm. So why do you guys think that they let Pike go?
Well, I think the implication was the meanie human was like, oh shit, these are humans.
Right. That's what.
And so now we care.
That's what I thought too.
Humans, and they didn't tribes care about tribes.
Yeah, they never said that, but that's what I assumed too. But then later on, Pike goes like, they clearly saw us, and either they didn't recognize us or they didn't care.
Yeah. I was confused by that line because it obviously
seemed like they care.
Yeah.
Now, he might have been referring to something else, but like, it seemed in that moment that they cared. Oh. So it's and it seemed like they recognized him, and it seemed like they cared, because if they recognized him and didn't kill him, that means they did care. Right. And if they didn't, right. and if they, you know, if they didn't recognize him, they would have just, yeah. So anyways,
would a plausible headcanon alternative scenario that would resolve this and allow both things to be true. Hmm. It would be that the other human, the enemy human, whatever we call them, mm-hmm. when he saw Pike unmasked, right?
Pike unmasked.
All of a sudden, he was like, man, this dude's fucking hot.
Mm.
I'm not gonna like shoot this guy in the face.
He's too cute.
Look at his hair.
Yeah,
can't do it.
Look at that dude's fucking face.
The hair. You can't beat it.
I can't do it.
Yeah. I'm
frozen.
You know, just in a spur of the moment. He might even thought, you know, might not be a good idea, but there's a chance.
Yeah.
We're at odds right now.
Yeah.
But who knows how this is going to end up?
Yeah.
Don't want to burn any bridges.
Don't want to do it.
By shooting this guy in the face. No. Yeah.
I'm frozen. Let it go.
Notice I did a short clip, so we won't get pinged by copyright.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out.
That is a popular one. We might.
I think we'll be all right.
Okay,
we'll see.
We'll see. Right. Well, we're testing. It's for science.
Yeah. Right? Yes, this is indeed
science.
That's why we do this podcast. We do it for science.
Okay.
Science.
Okay. Here's the other thing about this human situation happening that I had a problem with as well. So Uhura's like. They're all like, oh my gosh, these are humans. This is an American flag. It's humans. And Uhura is basically like, I did some digging and I found in a database that like they came up with the first interstellar ship to go try to live in the stars and in live a celestial life
out
in the cosmos. Ship. They were at a colony ship. And that's not in the history books anywhere. Yeah. That is arguably more important than the lunar landing. And like,
I would
agree.
They know.
And I say that as I'm a big fan of the lunar.
Yeah,
landing.
I'm all for the lunar landing. Yeah, you know, but like, I mean, they
and
like,
the Wright brothers.
That's like right up there with. I mean, maybe not as important as Zefren Cochrane, but I'd say at least as noteworthy along the journey of how we got to where we got. And so I found it hard to believe that like nobody seemed to remember that this event happened, and they made it seem like it was this. Now, granted, I guess World War III just happened, so everything was a wreck. Yeah. But still, like this, some kind of story would have been passed down that this happened, and Ben Paley is like, oh yeah, I think I remember that, you know,
right.
You know, like,
I almost would have preferred if they just again had the twist that they were human, but then left it be a mystery, be like, who the fuck knows,
right?
It must have been, and being like, it must have been one of those early colony ships, because there are all these colony ships going off.
Yeah.
Leave it to be the mystery. Let us develop some of our own thinking behind what went on, because whatever point they were trying to make again got muddled in the process of presentation.
That's actually, I think, a pretty good idea. If the canon was more that several colony ships went up, and they're like, oh, it must have been one of those old ones. Who knows which one? Yeah. That actually would have been. I think that if you were there in the writer's room, you would have had the best idea in that room.
Well, we're gonna call him up. Call up Dr. Star Trek.
People, Bob.
Oh yes.
1-800 Dr. Star Trek. You made me sorry. I'm sorry, because it doesn't make me think of Dr. Spazo.
I am Dr. Spazo.
For those who don't know, back in the day, computers used to have only beeps and boops. And then
I don't get it.
And then there was this glorious invention called the Sound Blaster.
I don't get it.
And you could install the Sound Blaster, and one of the demos on the Sound Blaster to demonstrate the prowess of the Sound Blaster expansion card was a program called Dr. Spazo, where you could talk to it and it would talk back to you in a robot voice.
Yeah.
And you can find it online. There's simulators, Dr. Spazo simulators.
Run, coward.
Yeah. Way better than any of this chat GPT nonsense. His
advice, beware, I live.
His advice was good.
His advice was good. You said it like it was good.
It was good.
That was good advice. I thought that was really good advice.
Captain Kirk.
All right,
Mr. Scott.
We are running out of time.
Okay,
and Jesse is in full on hype man mode.
Yeah.
So we should start wrapping up our points.
So okay, Pike says, he says, all I can say is having empathy for your adversary is part of your job. So Pike's advocating for empathy, and Kirk's like, but I didn't think of them as people. Blah blah blah. Then
until I find out they were human.
And then Pike goes, empathy isn't conditional. It is either given or it isn't. It sounds like Pike should have listened to his own advice when he was calling the Gorn a bunch of dirty, slimy, greenscale monsters.
Yeah.
Which is a point I actually brought up last week, too.
Yes.
Yeah. And like he was like, and then he goes, because the next time you're in that chair, you will remember that we are often not that different from our enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a few two episodes prior, he's like talking about the Gorn being monsters, and he's like driving home this point of empathy, and it's like, it's just inconsistent writing, really. I mean, I'm sorry, I don't want to sound like I'm criticizing your writers, because I know, I don't want to be one of those people that it's so easy to criticize other people for what they do professionally when I don't do it myself, because it's easy to say, oh, I could have done better. I'm not saying that. I don't want to say that. I don't want to pretend. Like, the more you think you know about some shit that you don't do much, the less you probably do know about it. But like,
I get the point you're making.
But like, come on, man.
I just want to say, I agree with you, but I would like to see an episode of Star Trek written by you.
That would be far.
Not necessarily produced. The script alone would be sufficient. And if you would like to do an audio play version, we could get some of our friends. We could get Jesse and other produce. Jesse and Isaac. We could all do a radio play of Dan's Star Trek pilot.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's a pilot?
That's quite a final big point. Bits and bobs, because I do. There's a number of little bits and bobs that I think are interesting here. I'll start out by noting that Paul Wesley, who I, you know, again, is not always very Kirk-like, when he sat in the Fergus captain's chair for the first time, he looked like Kirk.
He did the leg cross,
and most importantly, he took his right arm and like Shatner would always do that, where he'd occasionally lift his right arm up and kind of bang the armrest.
Yeah,
it was like that. Paul Wesley did exactly the same thing. It was very subtle, but I think he did a really great job, in particular in that scene. And again, the use of the music was really cool.
So Star New Worlds. They say at the beginning it's a 5-year mission in Strange New Worlds. Mm-hmm. So now, since Pike passes the torch on to Kirk, when Kirk joins up, when they say 5-year mission in TOS, are they in like the third or fourth year of the mission or something? Because like, is it a separate 5-year mission, or is it all part? Is the Pike and Kirk part of the same 5-year mission? Because it's the same Enterprise, so wouldn't it be the same 5-year mission?
My understanding, and perhaps this is more sort of assumptions cobbled together from the corpus of the lore, but
the corpus of the lore.
My understanding always is that TOS was Kirk and Co. on a separate 5-year mission, and some ways through it, not like right at the beginning and all green about it.
So they're talking about Sullivan's planet, and they're talking about how, because of it wasn't called the Prime Directive back then, but because of what is now the Prime Directive, like
General Order Number One,
they say like, oh, we can't save him because they're pre-warp. Now, Patrick, once again, hearkening back to, was it Brother, Pauly?
Brothers?
Worf's brother, Pauly.
Pauly Walnuts?
When they talk about in TNG how like they were like, we can't save these group of people because of the Prime Directive, and you were like, that's bullshit, that's not in the spirit of the Prime Directive. What about this? Like, do you think they should? They were not. Pike was saying, we can't save these people because they're pre-warp. And so I'm saying,
did Pike say that?
There was a line in here
about the people on the ship,
about the people on the planet
on
the streets,
where there were people on the planet that were getting hurt.
What is it called? General Order?
I think General Order Number One, something like that. I don't know. I don't have a specific recollection of that.
There was something in this.
Something in the thing.
I don't fucking.
Typing in the
thing. Well, it was in here. Thing. And I don't. I know.
I'm sad that I don't remember the exact
Dan's
point.
On the spot.
I honestly, the last chunk of this, I was fully engaged through the vast majority of this episode, but both times I watched this episode towards the end, I was having a little trouble. I had to rewind it a couple times.
Pre-warp, so the non-interference directive means we can't warn them. He's talking about the Sullivan's planet.
Oh, yes, yes.
So they can't warn them.
I don't know. I think this is where it's always a debate, and it's not a matter of absolutes. It's about what the actual
only
capacity,
the Sith speak in absolutes.
Well, I'm just saying, what's the capacity to do something, right? Do they have enough time to warn them? Is warning them going to do anything meaningful?
Well,
to,
I mean, but that's not his point. The point he was making is that because the non-interference directive, we can't. It's irrelevant.
The reason I would side with him in this case is because of exactly what happened, which is it ended up being a moot point, and so the people will continue on unadulterated. They won't have a problem.
Yeah, but
as opposed to, we could have messaged them saying, you're about to be destroyed by a horrifying monster alien, and then they save the day, and then those people are like fucked up for the rest of life.
But I mean, he still, if it wasn't a moot point, he's saying he wouldn't have done it anyway, is what I'm saying. And so he wouldn't
I'm saying, not necessarily that I agree from a moral standpoint, because morals are complicated and nuanced, but that I understand the logic and even the moral logic between, given the various options, the preference is to stick to the policy, as opposed to 100% guarantee star is going to explode. These people are getting vaporized and it's a small number of people. It's practical to move them.
When Pike comes on the comm the first time, Kirk's like, Captain Pike, I'll dispense with the pleasantries since we're still in a critical situation. That right there, I think that was a pleasantry.
Totally. Yeah,
that was a pleasantry. Yeah. And then Pike goes, he wants to transfer the Farragut crew back to the Enterprise, and Kirk sounds like he's objecting because he goes, Captain Pike. And Pike is like, yeah, I know, I wouldn't want to give up my ship either. And then Kirk goes, it's the right call. If he thought it was the right call, then why did he object initially?
I think his mind was changed. I think he might have objected right away. Then,
you got to think fast in those situations.
I think Kirk thinks fast, and I think that's what he was demonstrating there.
Lon's talking about ion particles are primitive but effective, like bullets.
Bullets.
If they're effective, then they can't be that primitive. I mean, why don't they use them if they're that effective? What's better about a phaser than a bullet?
I know, right?
I mean, you can stun people with a phaser. I know why a phaser's better. It's because you can kill people with a phaser without damaging the set.
Yeah, that's right. You can get the set saved.
Yeah.
Ortega's made a vibrator joke.
Yes, she did.
Which was hilarious.
This is a personal massager.
And there was a callback. It was a double vibrator joke because she had that line there. And then later, when she's actually having to navigate the ship, which, by the way, I thought was a cute sequence, when she lifts it up, before she puts it to her ear, she looks at it and she makes a gross face.
Oh,
you can tell she's imagining. She's like, I think somebody's rubbed this somewhere.
I did notice.
She like looks at it. She's like, ugh.
I did notice that she looked at it. At first, I was thinking like she was doing the thing where she was like looking at the thing instead of the person because it's the only thing. But that, yeah, I can see that.
Another fun thing was that when Kirk mentions the Farragut having a tailpipe, you know, there's like he talks about a tailpipe. The camera pans to Uhura, which I presume is a reference to Star Trek VI, when Uhura helps save the day with a tailpipe related gambit.
Right, baby.
All right.
Right?
Let's do.
I presume they were making some sort of purposeful connection there.
Yep.
When they pulled off the bad human mask and they saw that it was right when we find out it's human, I was really confused at first because I thought that was Sam Kirk.
Yeah, he had a mustache. I also was like, I was like, what is this, a planet full of people with drawn on mustaches, pencil thin mustaches?
When they were talking about Sam Kirk, like Spock was like, Sam was saying, you throw your weight around, and
Kirk's James, like, Kirk's my like, brother's a little fucking piece of shit.
Yeah, I know, because he says like, that sounds like Sam. Do you think Kirk thinks Sam is just like a kind of a loser or something? Yeah.
I don't think he thinks he's a loser,
but he's just kind of the fucked up one.
Sam is smart, like, and later in TOS, like, he's a scientist. He does cool like scientist shit, but he's kind of chumpy.
Yeah,
he's a bit of a chump.
He's chumperino.
Yeah.
He's not like, he's not a ne'er-do-well or like a loser, but he's just kind of a, he's like, I don't see him.
Yeah.
But he's cooler than that. I think I don't think James gives him enough credit. I think James needs to give him, Tiberius needs to give him a little more credit.
Yeah.
But they're brothers. What are you going to do?
Yeah. But they're brothers.
Identical brothers.
That's a Patty Duke Show reference.
They laugh like they talk alike.
We're hip. We're so hip. We're making Patty Duke Show.
They laugh like they walk alike. Sometimes they even talk alike.
You're going to lose your mind. They're cousins.
They're two of a kind. By the way. That's a great show.
What about this one?
It's Bewitched, which is another actually great show.
What about
this
one?
Can you do Mr. Ed?
Bewitched is great, and the previous one you were talking
about. What about, we all know Mr. Ed. It's like, you can talk to talk and waste your time a day.
Yeah, there you go.
Mr. Ed will never speak unless he's got something to say.
What about this one? What about this one?
My Three Sons.
Yeah.
With Fred McMurray. Yeah. Who was also in Double Indemnity.
We all watched too much Nick at Night as kids.
Donna Reed was great.
I thought you were going to say gonorrhea.
No. Okay, look, I know we're running, I know we're running long. We're going to finish in a second, but in episode 300, we did talk about how we thought it was helpful for the audience to know more personal anecdotes about the host. It helps ingratiate us with the audience.
People like a connection. They like to be related.
And here's a good opportunity where...
There was a duty or no duty.
Duty.
Is there a duty or no duty?
I mean, we can hold it off to next week.
No. We'll do it in a second.
We're going to duty.
I was just going to mention that I was in my early 20s, I was at the psychologist. And I was, we're asking questions.
Because your brain's fucked up.
Help me sort through my fucked up brain.
No, I had a fucked up brain.
Too. And at one point, I was making an analogy about something that was affecting me. And the analogy I utilized was a reference to the Donna Reed show. And this psychologist guy looked at me like, how the fuck do you know what Donna Reed is?
Right.
He was like an older dude.
Yeah.
And I had to explain it. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Let's wrap things up. We got a duty or no duty, which is great. This is a surprise.
Surprise duty.
End of show duty or no duty.
No duty.
Lay it on us, Dan.
As ranking medical officer on board, it's within my power to evaluate him. And if he is mentally unfit, remove him from duty.
Okay.
From duty, from duty, from duty, from duty, from duty, from duty.
What say you, Jesse?
Duty.
Duty. I agree.
Duty all
Straight
the way.
Straight up duty.
All the way duty.
Clearly.
He's showing classic signs of strain under duress.
You know, they didn't need her to give those medical words to just say like, yeah, he's stressed out.
Yeah.
You know, she's like.
He's showing classic signs of strain under duress.
It's like that she tried to fancy it up, but it's just like he's stressed up.
She's a doctor.
Do you think she really has do you think doctors really have the power to like. Like, because all you need for a mutiny is to get the doctor on your side, and the doctor could just be like, "Yeah, I'm a doctor. He's not good. He's not fit to serve." Do they really have that kind of power?
Why do you think Picard?
That's why they're on the ship, baby.
Why do you think Picard was so nice to Crusher all the time?
Because it's like if he pissed her off, he'd be like, "Yeah, you're off the ship."
And Crusher would have no problem doing it. She'd be happy to do it.
She'd love it.
That's why she took the command, business. Because not only would she get rid of Picard, she could take fucking command because she's qualified to do that.
She would of it.
That's right. I think we concluded all our bits and bobs and doodads and all that other stuff.
Dingle dong. There was a lot of monster talk in this episode, but
monster.
Yeah, monster. A lot of monster talk.
There's been a lot of monster talk this whole season.
They were considered monsters.
Whoa, that was really quiet.
Wow. All right, so
they were considered monsters.
They weren't monsters.
We'll do the wrapping up business.
Yeah, we can do it.
Clicks and clacks. Thank you very much for listening to whatever you've listened to this week. What is that?
Nothing. This is your bed.
Okay. All right.
This is your bedroom.
I got you now. All right. I get it. Very well done. Yes. So thank you for enjoying the show. Hope you've enjoyed it. That was the Salot who ate its tail. Next week, we'll be discussing what is Starfleet? And
what is it, baby?
I don't know about that episode. I think some people may be mad at me next week. So something to look out for. We'll be talking about what is Starfleet. In the meantime, if you'd like to reach out to us, you can get us at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com or indeed on social media anywhere, just about anywhere, at It's Got Star Trek. the website is www.itsgotstartrek.com. Patreon.com/itsgotstartrek, and please subscribe to us on YouTube. That about does it. Thank you very much, Dan, Jesse. Until next week. Bye bye.
Time kangaroo down. Timey kangaroo down. Sport. Timey kangaroo down.
Good night, Captain Kirk.
Purposefully obtuse arrangement.
I know.
Oh my goodness. I have piloted many a starship with this. Granted, they were 8-bit, but it was a good time on a Friday night.